やめてたまるか。お前と俺は濡れたからさ、
一生かけた
一度の絆、心配するな、
泣いてだけの最高だって。ずっといつまでも、ずっといつまでも殴り合って、けなし合いて。
Welcome everyone to a very special episode of the DKP here at WrestlingObserver.com/F4WOnline.com, and we have a man on the line that I know many people want to hear from. They want to hear from him because he is definitely one of the most improved professional wrestlers in the world in the last year or so, and he was dealt a very, very rough hand last week when he got released from WWE, but he is making the best of it from everything I've heard from this man. That man is Chris Masters. Chris, how are you doing? Thanks for joining us.
Very good. Thanks for having me.
And Chris, I mentioned there that you are one of the most improved wrestlers in the world, and this is something you've talked about quite a bit. Even CM Punk referenced it in an interview on Raw last week, and from listening to other interviews you've done and reading things you've said, it's something that you've really stressed has been something that you've really worked hard at to kind of change people's image of you and their perception of you from your first run in WWE, and to try and make your name as a really good in-ring worker. And I think for anyone that's been watching your stuff, I don't think they'd be able to disagree.
Well, I appreciate that. And I think things started to click in my head over the last year as far as the mindset and mentality that go along with being a great worker. And as time went on, I just realized, just getting yourself emotionally involved in the matchup was half the battle. And then really taking whatever ass whooping you took in that match and giving it back to them and, really believing that. And, like you were saying about the critics, I loved professional wrestling my whole life. I never wanted to be a bodybuilder. I got worked out for the with the intention of going into pro wrestling. So, I mean, it was always I always read the criticisms and heard what people had to say about me, and I didn't want to be that guy that just kind of walked in and got the push and, was just a body. I really kind of wanted to work from the bottom and work my way up, and, I respected guys from my childhood, like Shawn Michaels and Bret Hart and Kurt Hennig. I respected the guys who were really great in-ring workers because you could see the work that they put in behind their matches. You could tell just the talent they had. And, I just really, I didn't want to be compared to the Ultimate Warriors and all those guys out there. So, I really enjoyed over the last year, going out there and busting my ass and, really trying to better myself and show people that I wasn't just a body, that I was somebody who could go. And I felt like I was really really starting to get somewhere as far as being one of the better in-ring workers in the company.
For sure. And to take it back a little bit, you mentioned Shawn Michaels there. And when you started in WWE, one of your first feuds, or perhaps your first actual proper feud, was with Shawn Michaels. And I assume you were working like the house show loop with him at that time?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I got to work with him all over the world and Europe, Australia, and I mean, it was so incredible just looking back at that, even now that I got that experience, and I'll always cherish it.
Yeah, it's in some ways it's a bit of a trial by fire, but in other ways it's just something that is probably as good of a start as you could have in terms of trying to improve right from the outset. Like, I remember when Bobby Lashley came up, they paired him with Finley right when Finley started wrestling again, and it was crazy how quickly Bobby Lashley just hit the ground running and improved his skills, because when he kind of came out of OVW, he was quite limited. But working with a guy like Finley, or in your case, Shawn Michaels, is just going to help you so much. And if you hadn't had that run with Shawn, how do you see like maybe that first run panning out differently? Would it have taken you maybe longer to kind of get rolling?
Well, I mean, I feel like at that point I was so young and so early in my career, and I had so many at that point I already was making bad decision after bad decision, and like I could have gotten probably even a lot more out of that say if it happened the second time, just because my head was in such a better place and I was a little more mature and older. I was about like 21 years old when I actually started on TV there, so as much as I knew you know, what a great opportunity it was to work with Shawn Michaels and whatnot. It's just, you know, I'm still growing as a person, and I don't think I got everything I possibly could have out of that. But I know I definitely, you know, got to feel what it's like working with guys who are as comfortable as Shawn Michaels and Ric Flair and Triple H in the ring, and kind of, you know, what it took to hang with those guys. And, you know, I mean, it was a great experience all around, but I could have definitely, if I would have gone to work with Shawn the second time around, if, like, say, the first one never happened, it would have been incredible kind of what I would have probably picked up and where I could have gone from there.
Yeah, I think a current-day Chris Masters versus, like, a current-day or even, like, a year ago Shawn Michaels would be a match that people would be drooling over right now. But one of the...
Oh, yeah, we would tear it up. I always think about that now. I'm like... You know, I made the best out of it. I think we came out with a great pay-per-view match, and we had great matches, but that was because, you know, when you're in there with Shawn, he was my childhood hero, so I was so motivated every single night to be there for him and make the match good but not kill him at the same time, so he trusted me. And he actually, not a lot of people know, but after I worked him the first time, he let me call every one of our matches from that point on every house show we ever worked. I would basically... call the whole match. We would know the finish going in, and that was it. So that's how much he ended up trusting me. And you know, that was probably the greatest tool of it all, being able to call a match with the greatest in-ring worker ever. So I just want to get that little point out there.
Yeah, that's pretty cool for sure. And one of the biggest parts of your initial run in WWE was the Master Lock, and it was something that was really, really over, and that they pushed really hard. Was the idea of having that move as your finisher something that you came up with, or something that they came up with?
I'm sorry, what was the question? You just cut out.
The Master Lock, your finishing move, the Full Nelson, was something that was a really big part of your initial run, and still is a big part of your character in your matches. And was that a move that you came up with to use as your finisher, or was that their idea?
I think it was a collaboration of maybe Arn Anderson and... maybe even Triple H and myself. We were trying to come up with a finish for me at the time. And, you know, the biggest memory I have about kind of how that came about from the time was just around 2005, you know, the bar had been pushed so far that they were trying to go a little old school and get, you know, some of the basic stuff over again with the crowd and kind of, you know, retrain the fans' brains. So, you know, we weren't having to jump off ladders and buildings to get reactions every week. So, you know, that was the mindset at the time, and, you know, I feel like that could have been part of the motivation of going to the, using a Master Lock as a finisher. But, you know, as the years have progressed here, finishes like that, I think, have gotten more credibility, maybe if through MMA or whatnot. But you see, you know, a lot of guys with submission finishers, and even guys who have regular finishers have submission finishers now, too. So, you know, I don't know... I mean, I know there's always been submissions in wrestling and sports entertainment, but it feels like it's become probably a more believable thing almost within the last few years even, maybe.
How happy were you with the way the Master Lock Challenge went as a gimmick? And they kind of blew it off there when I believe it was someone from the troops on the Tribute to the Troops show broke the Master Lock. And was he the only person, as far as I remember, like no actual active wrestler on the roster broke.
Bobby Lashley broke it.
Did he?
That I kind of looked at. Yeah, Bobby was actually the first one to break it. They built it up on Raw, but the troop who did it, I think JBL was involved with that, and it was more kind of a gimmick. So I don't know if we, you know, I didn't take it that seriously, and I don't know if anybody else really did. But Bobby Lashley was actually the first guy to break it.
I actually remember that now that you say it, the Bobby Lashley one. I totally blanked on that. But that was that was probably a good while after, like, that was for a few years almost after you'd started doing it. So it got quite a lot of mileage.
Yeah, it did. And, you know, people ask me if, you know, how I feel about that. And it's just like, well, Bobby was the right guy at the time. I mean, you know, looking back now, hindsight's 2020. I mean, Bobby's not there anymore, so, you know, he wasn't the right guy, actually. But at the same time, you know, what's done is done, and, you know, I don't know who else you would have had break it at that time. You know, I always thought Batista, but then again, what would it do for Batista? Batista didn't need that kind of push behind him. He was already there at that point, so Bobby made more sense.
Now, shortly before you left WWE for the first time, you had a team of Carlito, which I think was a really one of the first times you you really showed a lot of progression as far as your in-ring work. And I think that tag team surprised a lot of people with how well it was doing. And it seemed to kind of get cut off a bit short. And were you enjoying working with Carlito? And did you see that team as having more potential than it got to deliver?
Oh, yeah. Well, Carlito was always able to bring out some good entertainment, especially with our interaction. So that's kind of what I really enjoyed. And we really traveled together. So and the dynamic of our relationship is kind of interesting and something you'd want to put on camera anyway. So I really enjoyed that. And, I was hoping actually we'd be able to do something on the second run. Like, I remember we went to tribute to the troops over in Iraq. And the way they do that is there's four groups and there's like seven people per group. Group one, two, three, and four, and group four just happened to be myself and Carlito, and that was it. And everybody called it the probation crew because Carly was messing up at the time. And I had just come back from being released, actually. You know, this is when I just came back to the company. So it was really funny. We thought that the two of us were just paired off and everybody else was in these big, huge groups. But we had such a great time and we just acted so ridiculous the whole time. But we made the troops, you know, the troops had a great time. And everybody was just so entertained by it. I remember Michael Cole was just harping on and on about the Chris and Carly show and how we need to get these two back together because we were just producing some of the most funny shit, you know, over there, probably better, more entertained than anything else that was going on. And, you know, it was just such a great time. I figured we might get a second run out of that. But, you know, Carlito at the time was having his problems and, you know, kind of on his way out. And, you know, eventually he did end up leaving. So, you know, it never materialized.
And you got to work the opener at WrestleMania with him in 2006, I believe. And how big of a high was that for you?
Oh, it was crazy. I just remember, oh, gosh, I don't know. I was just on this. I can't even put in the words, man. I just remember. The close I ever felt to that was, I mean, just this past year that I can remember was just even going out for the Lumberjack / Battle Royal this year's WrestleMania. I mean, I was just itching on the outside, I remember, to get in there and, you know, and put it down. And it was just like, but I was, you know, on one hand, you're like upset because you're like, you know, I should have a match on Mania or I would like to have a match on Mania. But the other hand, I was just like dying to get in there for whatever shot I had, even if it was just a battle royal, to, you know, light some people up and try to make a moment. And, you know, I just remember that feeling at this year's Mania, even though I wasn't on the Mania card, just going out there in front of that big crowd probably felt a lot similar to even working that Mania match that you're talking about. But, you know, I'm sure that I know that the high of that was incredible and, you know, something that, you know, will live with me forever.
Now, this current run that you've just finished, a lot of your really good matches that people need to go out of their way to see took place on Superstars, which is a show that I feel gets very neglected by a lot of wrestling fans because there's a lot of good stuff happening with it, and it's just a very easy show to watch, with good wrestling, good commentary, and a lot of young guys trying to make an impression. And you were pretty much the one of the focal points of that show for about the last 18 months. And how was it for you working on that show as opposed to like on the main Raw and SmackDown shows, getting a bit more time to wrestle and getting to work other guys into a similar position as you?
Well, I loved it because we got time to work. So that's where I felt like most of my progression took place. And I was booked full-time on the house show. So it's like for the first time in my career, I felt like on a weekly basis, I was absorbing this like a sponge, you know what I mean? Like I felt like it was a puzzle that you needed to put together, you know what I mean? It's like there's your selling and then there's your babyface fire and then there's your connecting with the crowd. And I was starting to find all those pieces. Like I think my selling came along was the first thing because I remember Michael Hayes had worked a match on Superstars last year. And I remember Michael Hayes giving me a criticism saying that my selling was like old school or something like that. And I remember I took that with me and, you know, I just kind of rethought the whole game. And I thought to myself, you know what, I'm going to erase my memory of all the wrestling I've ever watched and actually just concentrate when I'm out there about how this would really feel. And that's when my selling started becoming my best, I feel like the standout thing about my work. But, you know, I still felt like there were other pieces of my game that I need to pick up, like my babyface fire and all that. So, you know, as my selling progressed, then I started working on my babyface fire, and then I started thinking about just my entrance and just, you know, connecting with the crowd, smiling, you know, for them, you know, letting them know that I'm having a good time out there. And, you know, and then also half the battle was just with the lack of TV time, you know, sometimes trying to get people to care. Because, you know, like, crowds started really reacting for me over the last few months, because I think, you know, people started to catch notice, at least a small group that watched Superstars, of kind of what was going on. But, you know, there were some times where crowds aren't receptive because you're not in a main storyline. So the battle for me also became, after all that, was just getting people to care just through the match itself, like really getting them to believe my pain and really getting them to want to see me fight back on the heel. And, you know, it really became a great challenge for me over the last year and a half, you know, especially going out there and them having me lose. Like a year ago, I had a string of a few months where I lost every match, and I was just always thinking about, okay, well, that's fine. They want to have me lose again, but I'm going to make it the best match possible with the most credible finish to beat me. And I would, you know, strategically, like, kind of vision this in my head of, you know, how can we tie in the finish to what we've done, and, you know, just do all that. And, you know, just also the challenge of trying to have a great match with every single heel, you know what I mean? Whether it was JTG or Jack Swagger, or, you know, just the challenge of being one of those guys who could go with anybody. I mean, these were all the things going through my mind over the last year and a half. And it was basically, it was my obsession. You know, every week I would watch over and over what I did and pick apart every little piece of my work and what I liked and what I didn't like. And it just became, I mean, I just became so obsessed with it and, you know, but also passionate at the same time, because I really felt like, you know what I mean, every week I'd watch it and there were certain things that I'd see I liked and disliked, and, you know, I was really able to make corrections. And that's where I go back to saying, you know, I just started really absorbing it like a sponge. So, anyways, that's what I said about that.
Well, you mentioned some of the heels you wrestled there, and one heel that you had quite the rivalry with on Superstars was Tyler Rex, the guy who, again, he didn't get much of a chance on the sort of Raw and SmackDown shows. He had a little run on SmackDown, but very quickly he was kind of put to Superstars on a regular basis. And you had a series of matches with him. I believe you wrestled like at 3-4 weeks in a row on Superstars with Tyler Rex, and just always an awesome match every time. And what was it like having that little mini feud or mini rivalry with him?
Well, I'll tell you something about that. It was kind of funny because it was never like planned or anything. It was never brought to us like, hey, you guys are going to work every week. It just ended up like that. I worked him the first week, and we had, you know, I think when I worked in Chrome, I remember I worked him once in December where we had a good match. There was two segs where he had worked my arm over, and it was a good match. But then the one you're talking about, we had a string of like four matches. So they booked us for Superstars, and I remember the first match was like, okay, you know what I mean? It was like decent, but it wasn't great by any means. And then I remember the next week they booked us again. So I remember everything I watched in the match before that. I'm like, okay, we need to step this up. You know, like we really need to bring some more intensity. You know, this is the way we look. So this is the way we need to prepare ourselves. And, you know, and with each week they came on, then they booked us again. And it just became a challenge of like, okay, well, how can we make this good and different? And then I think it was like after our third match, I remember the next week, the Rex, he was pitching all day because I had to work Kurt Hawkins to do a run-in on Superstars. And he was literally just like going to the office and, you know, just, you know, they didn't really care and they had so many other things on their plate that, you know, I felt like he was over pushing him. I was like, dude, you know, just give it up. But like, he was so tenacious about it. And finally he sat down with Michael Hayes, and Michael Hayes agreed that we could do it, that he could run in and jump me in the match. So he literally got clearance for that right before my match with Kurt Hawkins. And he told me he was going to come out and jump me, yada, yada. I was like, okay, cool, you know, whatever. I was concentrating on the match. So I go out there and I work Hawkins. And then we finished the match, and then I completely forget that Tyler Rex is even coming out there, because it was just like, it wasn't like such a big issue in my head. It was kind of like it was a last second thing. I didn't even really think that we were ever going to get that. But I remember he nailed me, and it completely surprised me. But then I remembered, oh yeah, he was coming in here. But if anybody ever gets to see that, it's great, because it was like me celebrating my victory on Hawkins. And then I turn around, and then boom, just out of nowhere, Tyler Rex is in frame and completely freaking just nails me. And it was like, it was actually, I think, one of the funniest and best
runs. Yeah, I remember it distinctly, and I really like that. And it's cool to know kind of the origin of that run-in now and why it was so realistic. But you mentioned like sort of the putting the matches up, or like booking the matches week to week and stuff like that. Who is actually, is there a superstars booker, or is it like, do they rotate Rand's responsibilities? Like, who's mainly responsible backstage for kind of putting superstars matches, like who faces who? And you mentioned like Michael Hayes, obviously getting approval from him, but who's really involved in that process?
Well, I think Ed Koski, I know, has a big hand in superstars, but you know, when it's still at the end of the day, the finishes and all that are approved by, you know, the boss, I'm sure. So, you know, they kind of look at who's not working on the main show, and then I'm sure, and then, you know, piece together superstars. But, you know, over the last few months, it's been really crazy. Like, you'd show up at TV, and the lineup would change, like, five times, and, you know, your match would change from this guy to that guy to, you know, and even sometimes in the ring on those superstars matches, would reverse the call in the ring. Like, even that last match I had with Jack Swagger, I was supposed to go over, and then they made the call to switch the finish in the ring and, you know, do the rest of your piece. So, you know, when you watch that, you know, originally I was supposed to go over and then Swagger put the ankle lock. But that had happened before, too, where in some of those matches with Tyler Rex, where they told Rex he was going over, and then we'd be in the ring, and then they'd switch the finish. So, I don't know if a lot of people know that, but yes, that happens.
That's pretty crazy, and my listeners will kill me if I don't mention this and bring this up, and it could be a possible explanation for that finish being switched in the Jack Swagger match. One of my listeners put together basically a lineage of a fictional Superstars Championship, and basically starting with the first episode and who won the main event, and then working on from that point onwards. And Christian was the first champion, and he lost it to someone else, etc., etc. Well, Chris Masters, you won the belt from Tyler Rex you won it from Vance Archer in July 2010, and then you lost it to Tyler Rex, won it back from Tyler Rex, and proceeded to have the most defenses of the fictional Superstars Championship until your match with Jack Swagger. So I guess they were having you drop the belt on the way out.
I guess so. I never looked at it like that, but that's pretty funny.
Yeah, you had 8 successful defenses of the Superstars Championship, so it was pretty cool. We were tracking the champion from week to week and wondering if you'd ever drop the belt, and unfortunately you weren't able to take it with you a la CM Punk, but I'm very surprised to hear like that they even like on a Raw or a SmackDown or a pay-per-view that they'd be like switching finishes while the wrestlers are in the ring, but doing it on Superstars, that's pretty crazy. But a couple of other things just to mention before we wrap this up. NXT was a show that you had a bit of a presence on the season before the last one, which I feel was the most entertaining NXT season. I did a lot of good characters, both in terms of the rookies and in the pros, having you and a guy like Dolph Ziggler going to show his personality, and Ricardo Rodriguez. I distinctly remember the three of you up on the stage singing along to R-Truth's music in Spanish. And I don't know if you remember that one. And did you have fun doing NXT? And what was that experience like?
I actually really enjoyed it, especially while Ziggler was still up there. I think it was the last episode where he wasn't on, and it was just brutal sitting up on that stage for such a long time. But, I think I really enjoyed it because we just had fun up there messing with each other. I remember I would just sometimes go nuts and go into, like, crazy commentary mode where I'd watch the match and, like, try to really commentate it like a real commentator and call all the maneuvers. And, you know, I'd try to get other guys in with me to do the color. So, I just kind of entertain myself like that. But, the whole experience was fun until they, you know, switched my rookie, and then he got cut all in the same day, which I labeled the NXT screw job. I remember I had Byron Saxton, and then they knew that Novak was going to get eliminated and that Ziggler was with Novak. So they made the switch before, and then they had cut Novak, and then I was like, wait a minute, you could have just told me that you were going to cut Novak. You switched him over to me and then cut him, and completely left me out of the loop. Like, thanks a lot. That feels like a screw job to me. Like, you could have told me, you know, at least told me, like, hey, we're switching this guy to you, and we're going, he's going to get cut tonight, unfortunately, but we got to keep Ziggler with somebody on the show. I mean, you know, I just felt like, you know, you don't have to work me. You could have, you know, at least let me in on the whole deal so I knew, so I'm not just up there like, oh, my new rookie just got cut, you know, like a dumbass.
Yeah, for sure. I got to ask, when I think it was when Ziggler got cut, it might have been Byron Saxton, but Dolph, they were doing the thing where they cut the promo as they leave and the sad farewell, and they were walking back up the ramp, and Dolph was, it seemed to me, just like begging for the rookie to, I think it was definitely Novak. Dolph was pretty much begging for Novak to lay him out, and he was getting right up in his face. I don't think Novak just didn't take the hint, and he just walked past, and I think, I could be wrong, but did you improvise and just decide to put the master lock on Ziggler just because he was like waiting to be hit?
Oh, well, that was all spur of the moment stuff. Yeah. I mean, it wasn't improvised about right that second, but, you know, like this was all being thrown together kind of as we went along. And I remember they wanted me to put Ziggler in the master lock, I think, to go off air or attempt to put him in it. But I remember that confrontation was kind of getting to one of those moments, I think, like you were saying.
Yeah, for sure. And a random point I have to bring up here, Chris, and that, as great as the master lock is as a finisher, you have one move in your arsenal that I feel you do better than anyone I've ever seen in wrestling, and that is your flying shoulder tackle. And that's that move. Did you just start doing it and realize you do it well, or is it something you've practiced? And then do you realize how good it is?
Well, which one are we talking about? Are we talking about off the ropes or off the second?
Both off the ropes and off the second rope. They both look so awesome.
Well, I love the one where I can run and do it because I can literally clear the ring. And, you know, that, part of my progression was also getting to a comfortable weight. Like, I'm 255 pounds now, and I'm still, like, in good shape. I think I probably look more like a masterpiece or a statue than I even did probably in 2005, where I was, like, 280 pounds and just overly huge. But, the flying tackle thing just kind of, once I became a babyface, I needed an arsenal, and I started, I don't know if the Warrior might have triggered that or whatever, but I just know that, like, when I do the running one and I hit the rope and I have enough momentum, I can pretty much clear the whole ring. And I was starting to really experiment with that with Jack Swagger, because we'd always kind of have this deal where he would, he'd put some heat on me, shoot me, double duck, and then I'd hit the rope and come off with that tackle. And sometimes he would, like, after the duck, he'd swing and he'd be all the way across the ring and I'd be hitting the far rope. And I'd be like, oh, my God, I'm going to have to, like, you know, really launch myself. But, every time, I was just able to still hit him no matter how far he was. So I started to challenge him and tell him, like, hey, go as far out as you can. You know, make me find you. And, you know, that's when I started realizing, like, hey, you know, this. And then I watched it a few times. I'm like, that looks pretty good. And, you know, I kind of felt like it looked better than Cena's, actually. So
I agree.
Just kind of kept. I kept it, and then I also like the second rope one just because, if you have the right guy taking it, it looks impactful. But, I just felt like good babyface moves. And then, you know, also the Samoan drop I felt like was kind of a good piece. You know, I was just really kind of to go back to, like, the puzzle thing I was telling you about, you know, when I, part of it was the selling, part of it's the babyface fire, I also realized, you know, I got to put together kind of a good arsenal here for a babyface. And then, you know, so that the tackles came in, the flying ones.
Oh, the sky high. That just popped into my head. There was a sky high you did on Drew McIntyre, I think it was, where he jumped like 7 feet in the air on it and it looked amazing.
Yeah, and that was another piece. My friend recommended that to me. I have a friend who was one of my childhood best friends. We used to watch wrestling, you know, for our whole lives together. So, like, a lot of times I'll go to him and I'll ask him, you know, for his opinion, since he's not in the bubble, and I'll ask him, like, is there a good move that you can think of? And I trust his opinions, and I remember he had told me, sky high, man, do a sky high. So, you know, that's kind of how that came about, and I used it, and it came out good. And then, I remember the one you're talking about with Drew, you know, just depending on who you're giving it to. But, I mean, yeah, the move was another good piece, you know, of the whole puzzle and kind of my arsenal. So I appreciate you bringing that up, though. Thank you.
Well, Chris, it's been a pleasure having you on, but I want to give you the opportunity now to kind of talk about whatever's coming up in your future. plugs, or do you have any like aspirations to maybe like go to Japan? Because I think you'd fit in quite well in a couple of the promotions over there.
Well, I'm not going to leave anything off the table this time. It's very different from the first time where, you know, I kind of take responsibility. Like, I made a lot of mistakes the first time. I was very young and I wasn't mature. You know, this time I feel like WWE did make a mistake. I feel like I really kind of came along and was reaching the peak of my career. And, you know, I really felt like this was going to be my year to come back from, you know, all the adversity I had to face over the last few years through my personal life and, you know, just my job and everything. But I'm not going to leave anything off the table, you know, whether it be Japan, TNA, you know, just any of it. I'm really going to, like, you know, kind of just explore my options. I think I'm definitely more passionate about sports entertainment, pro wrestling, than anything. It's like my release. It's like my outlet, and I love to go out there in front of a crowd and do it. So as long as I can do that and be successful, I will do it. But, like, in a short while, I'm going to be doing, I don't know if you saw the Masterpiece Theater clip, but that's going to be a regular thing going forward for the next few months here. So that was like a, you know, we crashed Access and did a little teaser, but we're going to have some good stuff going forward, and we're going to be releasing that weekly. So if you could actually post that for me, that would be great.
Yeah, I will do.
If you guys don't already have that on your site.
Will do. I'll put that up on the front page. And, yeah, that was a very cool video. And what's your YouTube account for that?
Oh, well, you just type in Masterpiece Theater SummerSlam because a good buddy of mine who's a documentary filmmaker posted it. But we'll start a YouTube channel going forward probably within the next week.
On Twitter?
But definitely on Twitter. You can follow me at WWE Master P. And also for bookings and other interviews, you can contact my booking manager, Vess, which is at masterpiece83@gmail.com. So, yeah, I'd just like to say, yeah, just going forward, just look for Masterpiece Theater. I'm going to do some cool stuff to ruffle some feathers. And, you know, definitely follow me on Twitter. And, you know, the next couple of years are just will be a big indicator about the direction of Chris Mordetsky, Chris Masters. And, you know, I think things will really start to take shape. But, you know, I definitely wouldn't count me out because I'm not you know, I'm very motivated. I mean, this time I felt like I was wronged, and, you know, I'm definitely have a message, and I'm going to get it out there.
Well, that's awesome, Chris. Thanks again for joining us, and I wish you all the best.
Thank you very much. Great interview.
Cheers.
Well, it's fine.